My name's Dave Robbins. This is a second part of Born and Raised in Bishopstoke. And once again, I apologise for sounding anything between a really broad Dartmoor farmer and a pirate, but it is the way it is. My secondary education was completed at both Tynmouth Secondary School and Tynmouth Grammar School about 1975. And I got a place at Sealhane Agricultural College. The practical year was spent at Shute Farm in Bishopstoke, although the school holidays previous to that had allowed me to work on the farm to get some experience. As a boy at the primary school, I'd look out from the playground at Mr. Lamble's Frisian cows walking from the farm to the fields, and a visit one day from the primary school to the farm was enough to influence me to want to become a farm manager. So at 16 years old, working for Ian Lamble, I took my tractor test at Colesbourne Junction in Bishopstoke. And I remember being nervous as a kitten and the driving examiner jumping out in front of me to conduct an emergency stop. And I had to show him the hand signals left and right, no indicators. And I can remember as clear as daylight, I felt like I was driving a juggernaut, which in subsequent years, I did. Milking Ian Lamble's cows was my first real job, and it was fabulous. I absolutely loved it. It was long hours and it was really hard work. And I think at peak there was about 80 cows that walked up and down through the village from Shute Hill, down Shute Hill, down to Cole's Barn, along the main road to the fields. And that would be done four times daily. So up and back and up and back. And it was done single-handedly. And I do remember the cows would actually stay the correct side of the white line when we were taking them along the main road. The other fields were, we would turn the cows right into Cockhaven Lane, and we'd end up going to the fields at the end by Metro Motors. And in the narrow part of Cockhaven, there was a guy that lived down there called Lou Back, and he would kind of stand outside his house and congratulate me if I managed to get the cows past his place without any mess on the road. Those cows became somewhat iconic in the village, and a song was written about them, actually referencing the fact that they would hold up the village bus, which was the Devon General 2B Albion Nimbus. And as a kid, I can remember looking at it, the 2B was the village bus. It would also hold up all the clay lorries along the main road. And I can recall that most of the people living in the village accepted the cows, but it was often the newcomers that would have a little bit of a moan and a little bit of a dig, and we would listen to them and take absolutely no notice whatsoever. The Lamble family that I sort of worked with, there was Ian and Gwyneth Lamble, and they had six kids, three boys, three girls, David, Richard and Robert, Anne, Elizabeth and Caroline. The kids all went to the primary school, and three of the lads still live in Bishopstoke today. We had some fabulous times, and I can remember other village characters that would come and visit the farm. One I recall was a village blacksmith who was Dickie Bird, and Dickie Bird would speak for hours, usually when we were busy. Dickie would moan about how the village had changed, how he didn't know anybody, and he'd be stood at the roadside talking to him, trying to get away. And he'd say, oh, I don't know anybody in the village now, Dave. Hello, Mrs. Somebody, all right? I don't know anybody in the car. All right, Noel, all right, Dickie. He'd be telling me he didn't know anybody, and yet everybody would be waving to him. And Dickie Bird was a fabulous character. Another guy was Bob Sampson. He lived in Cockhaven Lane, and Bob was a former dairy farmer from Luton whose herd got wiped out by foot and mouth in the 60s. And as a 16-year-old, I can remember Bob would swear for England. He would F and blind all the time, but he had a heart of gold. He was a great chap. We had farming brothers Edward and Julian Perkin, along with their father, who we knew as Old Man Perkin, who lived next door to Shute Farm. They would come and talk to Ian Lamble, it was Mr. Lamble to me, about other farming matters. And very occasionally, the herdsman, a guy called Max Friedrich, from Dawes Farm. Max worked in a state-of-the-art dairy unit up at Dawes Farm, which I was very envious of. And he'd come and visit me when I was milking the cows. And he would say to me in a German accent, he'd say, Dave, you see, I have no stick in my Mifflin parlour, no stick at all. And I'd say, well, that's really good, Max. That's fantastic. You know, I use a stick to guide the cows. I don't have no stick, Dave. I have a nail. And when they won't get out of the parlour, I poke them with the nail. Which tickled me at the time, good old Max. The days at Shute Farm were varied. The winter would almost be permanently milking the cows, walking the cows up and down to the kale fields. And I felt like you were permanently dressed in cow dung, you were. The herd were kept overnight during the winter in a covered yard, and the resultant slurry would be transported through the village in a Howard rotor spreader. And I do recall that the roads were almost permanently covered in a coating of cow slurry. The summer days were great, obviously milking the cows twice a day. We had the hay harvest where Mr. Lamble would drive the tractor and the baler, and the Lamble lads and I would go out and pick up the bales by hand. And then back in the day, other village lads would join in. Andy McDill, who lived in West Ham Meadows, Steve Harrington, who lived in Tapley, and we'd be sat on the top of the load, or I would be driving it, thinking I'm driving a juggernaut, through the village, carefully not allowing the branches to take the heads off the people that were sat on top of the load. And there is no way in this world that health and safety would allow that to happen today. Not a hope in hell. The pubs in downtown Bishopstaithen were a great attraction back then. And I kind of hoped, as I kind of got interested in girls, that permanently smelling a cow shit didn't put them off too much, but you did. You were working there every day, and it was a smell that kind of went with you. I previously said that I got my initiation to drinking alcohol by Mrs. Cowles, the village postmistress, but I pushed my luck in the other pubs with sort of varying degrees of success at about the age of 15 or 16. I remember the failures in the manor. Doris Ridd, the landlady, booted me out when I was about 15 because I wasn't old enough, quite rightly so. And then other days I'd go to the off-licence at the manor to buy crisps and pasties. What happened to pasties in pubs? Pubs don't sell pasties anymore. And I'd look into the bar and I could listen to the laughter, the smell of the beer, and you'd maybe catch a glimpse of a village girl or a lady sat at the bar with her baby sham and her glass of cherry. And I thought, I want some of that social life. I want some of that. The landlord at the Ring of Bells in my teenage years was a guy called Alfie Kane. When we were school kids and we waited for the school bus, we'd shelter under the awning of the pub. I don't know if we had permission to do it, but we'd go in there anyway. We'd invariably make a row. And about 8 o'clock in the morning, the gaunt, spectre-like figure of Alfie Kane, after a heavy night in the pub, would come down and he'd shout at us kids to shut up. So I figured he might have recognised me, so I never tried to get a drink in the pub, in the Ring of Bells, until I was old enough. However, the commercial was a pushover. As young kids, Gain and my sister, if we went out on a day trip with our parents, they'd go and get us a Coke and a packet of crisps, and you sit in the car when they went in the pub. And I thought, well, that's the norm, but I want to try and have some of this pub life. So at the age of about 16, my schoolmate, Stephen Arthur Blinkhorn, known as Blinky, we were at Timoth Grammar School, and we went into the lounge of the commercial one night. We were really brave, and we sauntered up and ordered 2 pints of lager and lime. Remember, it was the 70s. The landlady Dot served us, and I can recall we sat in the corner like two old men, hoping that nobody would notice us, and we were 16. And to become more credible, which seems absolutely ridiculous now, Blinky, cool as you like, lit up his pipe in the corner of the Bishop John pub. And then to top it all, on the same night, Roger Ford, who was our maths teacher at school, came in, took one look at us, shook his head in disbelief, and then just ordered a drink with Dot and carried on as if nothing had happened. And I can remember this being a kind of a seminal moment in my own social shenanigans and going in the pubs in downtown Bishop Stainton. So in the years of around 75, 1976, the halcyon days came to us village lads, and we really, really embraced them. The drinking establishments in Bishop were the Bishop John the Grandison, which is now the Commercial, which was then the Commercial. Now it's been renamed the Old Commercial Inn. We had the Ring of Bells, which was known as the Ringers, the Cockhaven Manor Hotel, Moores Park Hotel, and there was also, believe it or not, a nightclub in Bishop Stainton called the Merley Grange. Village characters back then were in abundance. You had the landlord and landlady of the Bishop John were Cyril Stanley Perkins, known as Mick, and his missus was Dot, and Dot in her own right is a legend in the village. The staff I remember behind the bar back then were Matthew Shadbolt, Christine Coleman, June Pick, Edna Longmore, and other local characters would have been Bill Bird, who always used to come in 10 minutes before time, George Passmore, Joe Renton, Steve Cummins, known as Joe Cummins, who drove Royal Blue coaches and lived at number 13 Clannan Street. The lounge, we used to look up to the lounge as youngsters, and we would see Dot up there hobnobbing it on her tree trunk stool with her goblet of whiskey and a cigarette, and she'd be socialising. The names I can remember then would have been John Watts and Norman and Elsa Payne. They kind of looked down on us youngsters with a little bit of disdain, and I can't blame them really, because we were noisy and we were always having a few drinks and sort of misbehaving. Ron Hurdley, Roger Gallagher also worked behind the bar, along with Mike Collins, and Sam and Doris Ridd worked behind there as well from their days in the manor. We youngsters would play drinking games in the corner. You'd have myself, Clifford Harris, Michael Gus Harris, of which a separate article could be written, Steve Bowden, Alex Bowden, Craig Bowden, they were lads from South Shields. There was Stuart Robinson, whose dad was a governor at Huntley, Blinky, and a cast of many more that would come and go in the pub. And we had a fantastic time. The girls from Huntley would come and join us, and it was great. We were no doubt very annoying entertainment, very noisy, much to sometimes the annoyance of the older, more mature clients. Having said that, the old boys from Huntley, the retired officers association place in the village, they had no doubt been there and done it before. And there was a couple of guys I remember really well. One was a guy called Ken Dunn, who would have been pushing 90, late 80s, 90, and a guy called Jerry Gollidge. And Jerry was an ex-World War II pilot, and he would tell me stories when he'd had a few drinks of his daring raids as a World War II pilot, and I wish I'd listened more. Ken would come down to Merley Grange nightclub with us, and we'd dance on the dance floor to One Step Beyond by Madness, all trying to be cool, and there'd be a bloke there who's nearer 90 than he is 80 dancing with us. And I'm looking back on it, I'm really glad we did it. I do recall amongst the many boozy evenings that if I saw Dot, I was being the bar looking across at the window, and if I saw Dot come in to make an entrance in the bar, I would stand up and announce, I would loudly say, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our very own Gloria Estefan lookalike, Dot Perkins." And everybody would cheer and clap, and Dot would come down through the door into the bar, often with a walking frame, a fag in her mouth with the ash hanging off the end, and her goblet of whiskey, and she'd be coughing like a barking seal, which was somewhat incongruous with the wonderful wonderful introduction of her being our Gloria Estefan lookalike. But my God, it was funny. She loved the attention. And then on the back of that, Gus Harris would announce Mrs. Perkins Diesel. And Gus's random word association and activities were baffling and legendary in their own right. The walls of the pub were stained yellow from all the fag smoke and the nicotine. And if you moved the picture on the wall, there would be a white square which would be behind it. for many, many years, naively, I thought that when Mick would sneakily pour a little bit of the slops tray into a glass, I thought that was the norm. And he would do it when nobody was looking. And I genuinely thought that was normal. In the pub, there would often be darts matches. And although I wasn't a darts fan, I would sit at the bar with Gus making daft noises, probably. And the darts players that I can remember would have been Mike Henley, Tony Giorgio, Mike Milverton, Bill Baston, who lived in Rose Cottage, Alan Pearson, Jack Aldridge, Juan, who was the chef from Murley, Pete Bull, Fred Honeywell, Gary Aldridge, Ron Hurdley, Ken Beale, Chris Humphrey. And it does sound like Uncle Tom Cobley and all, but that's exactly what it was like. One particular evening, I became the proud first of many to be the pioneer of window travel through the Bishop John fanlight window. We'd had a few drinks one night and somebody said, "Here, Robbins, I bet you couldn't get through the window." So encouraged by everybody having had a few drinks and had a few myself, I went through the window of the Bishop John, the fanlight window, and I can recall it was like being, it must have been like Hereford calf being born, coming out the back end, because you dropped out of the hole into the road. As time went on, all the lads did it, lots of girls did it. They did it whether they had skirts on or whether they had trousers on. And I remember Hazel Taylor, bless her heart, almost manhandling Hazel through the Bishop John window. And hundreds of people have gone through there. And it was almost like a pagan ritual. It wasn't. It was us being daft and drunk and harmless fun. Back in 2015, I reenacted it one night just for the sheer hell of it. And I cut my chest and I cut my shirt. And I do believe that I hadn't put on weight. I think the window had been changed and the latch had been moved. I genuinely do. Many people went through that night because it was raising money for the Andy Gunn Foundation, which is obviously a fabulous charity. And that particular night, the last time I went through, the landlady was Yvonne Barnes, and the landlord was the quiet, reserved, understated, mild-mannered Cockney, her husband, Tom Barnes. Gus would come in the pub just about every night with his spotty dog impression. And that was an impression he used to do from the Wooden Tops TV programme. And he would bark and almost like a scissor movement with his arms and his legs. And he had absolutely bizarre behaviour, which was bloody annoying sometimes, but it was really endearing as well. It certainly was to me. When Gus passed away relatively recently, I was privileged to be asked by his two brothers, Clifford and Nigel, to be present when his ashes were scattered at Red Rock down by the river. And I hope that Gus would be proud when three grown men, all over 60, did the spotty dog on Red Rock, barking, dancing and growling in Gus's remembrance. All right, that wasn't so long ago. So at the ripe old age of 17, I needed to pass my driving test, and the call to get my first car was calling. First car I ever bought was from Sheldon, a Hillman Hunter. Look out, girls. Nigel Davies, well, Nigel lived and still lives at Ware Farm. He'd have bought his first car about the same time. And we kind of modelled ourselves, or I did, on the 70s TV programme Starsky and Hutch. I went and bought a leather coat, and Starsky and Hutch were real cool New York cops, and they would slide across the bonnet and pull all the women. And I tried it once on my Hillman Hunter, and I put a hole in a pair of trousers and I made a slight dent in the bonnet of my car. So that kind of brought that to an end. Nigel and I would try and look cool by wearing cool sunglasses. And we'd carouse the pubs in Bishop before venturing off to the high life in Torquay and Exeter. And then occasionally, as a bit of a wingman, we would take Blinky, who I kind of imagined was Huggy Bear, and Blinky would smoke his pipe when we were down the 400 Club in Torquay. Yeah, pretty cool, eh? Smoking a pipe. No wonder we didn't pull any birds back then. I would then go in the mornings, I'd go to Ware Farm to pick up Nigel on another day after a night out. And Nigel's mum, Mary, would say, go up and see him. He's in his bed. He ain't got up yet. So I would go up and see Nigel and say, come on in, let's go. And he said, oh, I can't go yet. He said, Dad said I've got to see the sheep before I go out. Oh, for Christ's sake. I said, come on, Nigel, you got to get going. Starsky and Hutch. And he'd get out of bed and he'd pull back the curtains, bleary-eyed, look across the fields as far as he could see, so the sheep were like a dot on the horizon. And he'd go, yeah, that's all right. I've seen the sheep. Let's go.